Thank you, Bill. Poor Bill read 1 Kings 18 and 19 over and over again, not realizing that he was not going to have to be up here to do it. One of the joys of being a supply preacher is that the congregation is usually very forgiving when you make a mistake. If you forget part of the service, unless it's the offering, they will forgive you. If you mess up the order of service, they will forgive you. And so this time, to let you know, I have not forgotten our Old Testament scripture, but that I'm going to include it in our sermon. Bill did everything he was supposed to do. Really, what you're hearing today is two stories that are usually, in my experience at least, not put together. And I think God has something to say to us today when we put them together and see what happens first and then what follows. So in a time long, long ago, in a place far, far away, almost 3,000 years and 6,000 miles, there lived a king of Israel. His name is Ahab. Now, the people had begged for a king, but they weren't expecting someone like Ahab. In fact, they despised Ahab. He was not true to the God of the Israelites, Yahweh. The reason for this was that he married Jezebel. Now, Jezebel may be a word you know because it's a word we still use today, and a very derogatory word when it is used to describe a woman, usually someone who is shameless or morally corrupt. Jezebel worshipped Baal, not Yahweh, not the Israelites' God, and encouraged Ahab to build places of worship for Baal and to encourage those prophets that used to speak for Yahweh to instead come over to the side of Baal. Enter into this story one prophet who is still faithful to Yahweh, and his name is Elijah. And God calls Elijah and says, I have a task for you to do. It is time for my people to come back to me, and I want you to show them that I am their God, that I am the most powerful one. I am in the control of their lives and their history. So God tells Elijah to set up a competition. Now, nowadays, we're pretty used to competitions. You can see Dancing with the Stars, Survivor, things that are on TV. But this was really big competition. This was more like North Korea and the United States and nuclear armaments. Who is going to have the power? Whom will we follow? So Ahab is called by Elijah and is told to bring two bulls to the top of the mountain. Lots of these things with God happen at top of mountains, mountaintop experiences. So Elijah calls Ahab and says, bring two bulls. We are going to make a sacrifice and find out who really is God. During this time, there had been 3 years of no rain. Everything was completely dry. Animals were dying, people were dying, no grain. The people had been praying to Baal for rain for 3 years. So the wood that was brought to build fire for the sacrifice was very dry. And it would be really relatively easy for it to catch on fire. Now, Elijah, having a sense that God was going to show God's power, told Ahab to bring all these false prophets, to bring these worshipers of Baal, and come to this mountaintop to see what would happen. And he lets the worshipers of Baal go first. Put your bull on this fire, pray to your God to light the fire, and your sacrifice will go to God. and maybe then we will have rain. So the people pray, and they dance, and they call out to Baal and said, "Answer us, answer us," and nothing happens. Elijah, not what we'd really call in a very cordial or nice way, calls out to them, "Pray louder. If he really is a god, maybe he is off daydreaming or relieving himself, or perhaps he's gone off on a trip, or maybe he's sleeping and you got to wake him up." So they dance with fervor and they pray with fervor, but the fire is never lit. So finally, Elijah gets his turn. And I think he's pretty obnoxious about it. I love Old Testament stories because they're so real. So he says, "Okay, let me show you what my God can do." Remember, there's a drought. He says, "Bring all this water. Put water all over the wood. Build a drench. Have the water go into the drench. Even with this wet wood, my God will be able to light a fire." And then Elijah prays and also says, "Answer me, O Lord." But then he adds something very interesting. "So that the people will know that you, the Lord, are God, and that you are bringing them back to themselves." It's not just to have this display of power. The whole point of that is to bring the people back to worship for Yahweh. Well, and of course the story made it in our Bible, so you probably know what happened. The fire catches, and the sacrifice, the bull is burned, and the sacrifice goes up to Yahweh, and people cry out, "Yes, we will now worship Yahweh. We know that Yahweh is God." And soon thereafter, the rains come and the drought is over. Now, if you were Elijah, wouldn't you be flying high? Here, you won the battle. Your God won the battle, the contest. The people are coming back, and it's your job as a prophet to bring the people back to worship Yahweh. So all of life is good. And that's where we quite often end that story. But it continues. Because Jezebel is not very happy about this. And Jezebel gets word to Elijah and says, "I'm coming after you. You are a dead man." But Elijah's had all this faith. He would feel fine. He would know that God's with him. But nope, that's not what happens. He shows his humanness like we all have also, and he runs away to hide. He literally has had this mountaintop experience, God's presence in this dramatic way, and he so quickly forgets that God will continue with him even if or when life gets hard. So much for keeping your faith in God. He is scared. He's feeling alone. He's really feeling down in the dumps. I am reminded of Judith Spior's book, Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. I don't know if any of you know this, but I love it. And it begins with Alexander, the young boy, speaking. "I went to sleep with gum in my mouth, and now there's gum in my hair. And when I got out of bed this morning, I tripped on my skateboard. And by mistake, I dropped my sweater in the sink while the water was running. And I could tell it was going to be a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. Alexander does not find a prize in his cereal. He does not get a seat by the window on the way to school. He leaves out the number 16 when he counts. His mother forgets to put dessert in his lunch bag. And there were lima beans for dinner. And kissing on TV. And he wants to move to Australia. But his mom tells him that some days are like that, even in Australia. Elijah and Alexander are having terrible, horrible, no good, very bad days. So as Elijah runs, he hides under a tree, as if he can hide from God. And he says, I would just as soon die. But God's not going to let that happen. And instead of reprimanding Elijah, which as a parent I might be tempted to do, God provides for Elijah through an angel, a messenger of God, and gives Elijah food and water and tells him to sleep. With so little faith, God is still there. And Elijah keeps walking away, trying to get away from this threat of Jezebel. And this time he hides in the cave. And this is quite often where you may know the rest of the story. Elijah is expecting God to speak in a grand way, as God has done on the top of the mountain. Now, he's hiding from God, but he really wants to interact with God. It's as if God might not know where he is, as if he were playing peekaboo as a young child. When you put something in front of the young child, they think you can't see them, but you really can. He's afraid, and he's afraid God will not be there. And God does not show or express God's plan through what's familiar. The earthquake, the wind, the fire. Instead, Elijah has to wait. Now he's complained to God, I'm feeling sorry for myself, I had this great experience for you, and it didn't last, and where are you now? I can't hear you. That's because Elijah needs to be quiet. He cannot hear God unless he is quiet, because God speaks in a hush, a whisper, a still small voice. This reminds me of the disciples in our passage from Mark. They have gone from this mountaintop experience where Jesus has fed 500 people just with fish and bread. Wow, the power of God. And Jesus goes off to pray, and the disciples get in a boat because that's what they do. They fish, and all of a sudden a great wind comes up, and they don't know how they're going to get back to land. And they're scared. And they are afraid. And with this loud noise, they see Jesus. Jesus in Mark does not tell the wind to calm down, which is interesting. So Mark has a different point to make. Instead, Jesus gets in the boat. And when he gets in the boat, the winds die down. And he tells the disciples, do not be afraid. Sometimes the presence of God with us is very quiet presence. Yes, God can do magnificent things. And we can always and always should be thankful for those expressions that we see of God's presence. But sometimes it is in the very small things. When the wind quiets down, when we become aware of Jesus' presence with us, we have to listen, or we might miss it. It's wonderful when we go on a mission trip and we see the hand of God through the volunteers' work. We see a small membership church that does so much through their hospitality. We receive a clear medical report or a letter that says we get in our first choice college. And we're able to thank God and be aware of God's leading right then and right there. But sometimes it's only a whisper. To Elijah and the disciples, they needed to be quiet. How do we hear if we are not still? If we do not wait? If we do not listen? That's the catch, I think, in today's society. When we have our iPods on and our TVs on and we're working on our computers and the talk show hosts are talking and we're chattering at work, how do we quiet ourselves down to hear the voice of God? There are so few places in our lives where we are quiet. When we read the newspaper, do we stop and pray for what we're reading about? When we sit with Scripture, do we wait a moment and allow our minds and hearts to catch up to what is being expressed and wait for that verse that's going to grab us? When talk show hosts are screaming to see who can be heard, when we choose our news by who agrees with us, when we come to worship on Sunday but are not connected to God at the other times during the week, how are we going to recognize a whisper? It's ironic to me that quite often that happens when it's forced on us. When we are sick in bed with only our thoughts to occupy us. Or when we're up at 2 a.m. wondering where our teenager is. Or when we sit by a hospital bed holding the hand of an aging parent. We would all prefer God to speak to us and guide our lives in dramatic ways. And yes, please remember those events. But sometimes God doesn't work that way. I was very aware yesterday. I was in the kitchen and I was making a meal for someone who had had surgery. And I said, "Alexa, I just got one of those things for my birthday," because my husband wanted it, so he gave it to me for my birthday. "Alexa, play Presbyterian hymns." And it doesn't know Presbyterian hymns. And so I had it play something else. And then I thought about my sermon. And I told Alexa to stop. And I was going to be quiet. And I realized the birds were singing. The sun was coming through the clouds, and I felt a sense of peace. I had not felt that sense of peace 5 minutes before. We need to be watchful and quiet. We need to be still. To let that one phrase of Scripture ruminate in us. To remember that moment when we saw those flowers and thanked the person who had grown them. To think about the person who keeps making a suggestion to us, something that we may really not want to do, but we can't quite let go of it. To remember the giggles of a child and what it's like to feel really happy. Try it. Be watchful. Be quiet. God is still speaking, maybe in a soft whisper. Listen.